Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
It is time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT.
And before we start,
I'd love
to give an enormous thanks to MOTAT because they have been sponsoring us for... Must be getting on for a year now, I think.
Yeah, it
certainly started earlier this year. So thank you so much, MOTAT. It really, really is appreciated.
And actually, I think they're keen to maybe keep going next year.
Oh.
Pretty special, eh? Yeah.
That's very cool.
Maybe, like, let's go check out MOTAT. Why don't we do
a live?
Yes,
oh,
a
there we
live
go.
Dear yes, Science a,
yes,
from MOTAT.
I
That'd
like
be
it.
Cool.
Okay.
All right, we have to pitch that idea for the new year. But firstly, now I've been alarming people with this story just because you seemed alarmed in your email about this story. That was somewhat concerning that meteors might actually be more common than we thought.
Well, indeed. Yes. This is a very interesting piece of scientific research that's just come out. All to do with meteors. And if you're lucky enough and you stare at the night sky enough for long enough, you'll see a meteorite, I guess.
So you'll just point. You can just look whenever.
You can just look. But, you know, it takes time. But, you know, if you stay staring for an hour or two or something like that, you know, chances are you'll probably see one.
Wow.
So they're fairly common. But the ones that we see are tiny little, you know, almost specks of dust sort of thing. And they're travelling at enormous speeds through the atmosphere and burning up and leaving a trail behind them. And that's what we see. Very occasionally we get bigger ones and they're kind of a bit dangerous. So
bigger and maybe closer?
Well, bigger and hitting us. That's the thing.
That's what we're talking about.
Bigger and on target, I guess. And, you know, this is the reason that the dinosaurs died out 65.5 million years ago was an enormous... We'll talk about what we mean by enormous, but a big meteor that hit the Earth. And there's a big crater at the end of the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, and it's called the Chicxulub Crater.
And wait, so you're saying one meteor?
Yes, indeed. Oh,
killed
yeah.
out
oh,
all
yeah,
the
yeah.
dinosaurs.
Yes, indeed.
I always thought it was like a shower of
No. This was one. This was one big sucker. And the reason that they know that was because it contained the element iridium. And so all over the Earth, you can see this layer, very, very thin layer of iridium.
Okay? What?
And this is how they sort of figure this out. So that led to the extinction of the dinosaurs. So we all know about that one. But in fact, there was another one, which I was unaware of until this morning, 251 million years ago. And that killed 96% of all the marine species on the planet and 70% of all the terrestrial vertebrates. That's a lot. Okay. So we are kind of at the mercy of space rocks. So...
Definitely.
And, you know, when you think about it, space is an awfully big place and we're going to have to be bloody unlucky to be hit by a whopping great meteor. However, in, I guess, recent times, within the last, 10 years or so, the one in Chelyabinsk, remember it was on, everyone was driving along and they saw it in their webcams on their cars and they had this thing just going across the sky and just... bam, and all the windows broke and everything. And so that was a small meteor. And then there was another one in Siberia in 1908, Tunguska. And that just flattened truckloads of territory. And, and luckily it was all sort of uninhabited and everything like that. But so these things do land. So leading up to this study, which has been made of a meteor crater in Australia. And this is a thing called the Wolf Creek Crater. Okay, and if you look this up on the web, and I encourage you to do so, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's this perfectly round crater. It's absolutely spectacular. It measures about 1 kilometer across, big, decent-sized crater.
Yeah.
This was caused by a 15-meter meteorite.
What?
15-meter. Yeah. So that's not very big.
Compared to a little bit
more than the size of this room, possibly, you know. And that leaves a kilometer-sized crater.
Okay, so what you're saying yes. is it doesn't necessarily have to be a
very big,
meteor.
No, that's the thing. So so the interest in this recently was they were trying to date this meteor impact. They're trying to find out when it had happened. And Australia's really good because Australia's quite big. There's not a lot on it. So, you know, not a lot of trees and stuff like that. And so meteor impacts are easily seen. And so this one is of particular interest. Now, people up until now had thought it was about 300,000 years old. But these guys have done some research, and they have revised that now to only around about 120,000 years old. So it's a lot...
much more recent.
A lot more recent than was thought. And interestingly, they used two methods to be able to figure this out. And the first method was, okay, so when the meteor hit, there were a whole lot of rocks just below the surface that it exposed then to the sun.
Right.
And you expose them to the sun, you expose them to these cosmic rays, and these cosmic rays can do interesting things with the elements in these rocks, and they form particular isotopes, and if you measure those isotopes, you can then figure out how long it's been since those rocks were exposed to the sun. So that's number one way. And number two way is looking at the sand dunes, because when this meteor crater was formed, it altered the wind patterns around that area. And so you can then sort of, by analysis of the resulting sand dunes that came from these winds, they can figure out sort of...
Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's so clever. It is. It is bloody clever. And the beauty is that both of the methods sort of agreed with each other. And so they're pretty sure that every 120,000 years old.
Okay. Yeah, but this is... my question is, okay, it's not like... Okay, now we know it was at 120,000 rather than 300,000. Yep. So what does that mean that... Yeah, every 120,000 years something's going to hit?
No.
Because surely it's much more random than that.
Well, no, what they reckon is now they've got seven of these big sort of craters in Australia that have been formed in the last 120,000 years. Okay, so making this one newer, that then sort of changes the average of how often these things occur.
Okay.
And so Australia is only sort of bugger all of the Earth's landmass. So they've got seven of these in Australia.
In one.
Okay. Oh. And not even landmass, water mass as well, because a whole lot of meteors will just go straight into the ocean. We don't see them.
Yep.
So what they have now figured out is that roughly we are due, I guess, one big one every 180 or so years. You know, we're talking decent size meteors here. So, and that's relatively often, isn't it? You know, 180 yes. years is not really a long time in the grand scheme of things.
And 60,000 years away.
Yeah. So, what can we do about this, you know? We can be like, nothing. You know, that horrible movie Armageddon or whatever, which one it was, where they sent Bruce Willis up with a bloody atomic bomb or something to blow these things up.
Haven't seen it.
And they've sort of talked about this sort of semi-seriously, I think. But obviously, if a big one comes along, we're absolutely screwed. You know, there's nothing that we can do about this.
Yeah.
So we'll probably know it's coming, presumably, because you can track these things with remarkable accuracy now, you know, and maybe there might be a few years when they can think of, you know, shit, what can we do about this sort of thing? But just goes to show that we are prisoners of the universe, I suppose.
Yeah.
And, you know, any old thing can happen. The Earth could just get horribly unlucky one day and bonf, that'd be life as we know it. Written off. So sorry to be a downer just before Christmas, folks. But
start the show. Alrighty. Let's move on. And we are fast running out of time, actually.
Oh, so God, really? Sorry.
We'll do next topic, which is the coldest reaction, but you might have to
we'll
keep
whiz
your,
through that very quickly.
Your last. Oh, okay. You want to spend more time on your last one?
I want to have all your rant. Okay. So look, let's forget the cold chemical
reaction.
Are you
sure?
Yeah.
All right, well,
we can worry about that later. Okay. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, NCA then.
Well, I'm not saying NCA, but there's a thing called the Program for International Student Assessment, and you may have heard this on the radio this morning. And so...
No.
So these results have just come out. So this is a study of New Zealand 15-year-olds that was carried out last year.
Okay.
In terms of reading, mathematics, and science. And this happens, I'm pretty sure, every year. It might be every 2 years. I'm not 1,000% sure about that. But the sad thing is that New Zealand 15-year-olds are trending downwards, unfortunately. So the average scores for the reading and the science and the maths have declined.
Since
the previous test.
Okay.
And over the last 12 to 18 years, the decline, which has been gradual over that time, equates to around about a year's worth of learning.
So 15-year-olds are essentially at 14-year-old level
12 to 18 years ago, yes.
In terms of what they know or what they can do in those three areas.
Yeah. That's not good, is it?
No.
No, it's not. Okay, so the upside is that we are above the OECD average on this. Okay, that's the good side. So we're ahead of the States, we're ahead of the UK.
But regardless of comparisons, the fact that we are trending downwards anyway is not a good thing.
No, it's not a good thing. And you know, speaking as a university lecturer, I see this every year, every intake of new students. And, you know, they're just really, many of them, not cut out to be at university because they haven't got the necessary background from school.
Does the university have to then accommodate? Like, I'm just curious in the sense if you have, because there's the whole scaling thing that you do, right,
no,
in terms of grading?
No, not in science.
Okay.
We don't grade to a curve.
Right. Okay. So it's just
so what you
right
get
or wrong.
Is what yep. you get is what you get.
Okay. So then if you're dealing with larger amounts of students, yep. they're just going to fail in terms of not cutting it, I guess.
Yep.
They're just going to fail, and then what?
That's a damn good question.
Okay.
It's a really, really good question. And we, believe me, try our utmost to get them through. You know, my door's always open. Anybody can come and ask questions and stuff like that. But it's the preparation. If you don't have the preparation, it's going to be doubly, triply, quadruply difficult for you to succeed at university. And the weird thing is that you look at the seventh form, as I call it, or year 13 syllabus, and it's great. Mm-hmm. You know, this is really good stuff. If you come to university knowing all of this stuff, you'll do brilliantly. But for whatever reasons, they don't. Very, very, very few students really come along and absolutely wow us. Mm.
So this is anecdotal evidence, isn't it?
You're speaking from your experience. I am absolutely speaking from my experience. But my experience has been 28 years of doing tertiary teaching. And, you know, I can quite categorically say that
something is wrong.
Yeah, that something is wrong. And that the standard is getting worse and worse and worse. It really is.
All right. You tell me, why is math, reading and science so important to have in terms of a base knowledge, one, and then two, like, because we're talking, I guess, as a 15-year-old, you're not necessarily going to go into tertiary, you know, chemistry degree.
No, you're not.
For example. But having that base level is important. Why? And then also, because what we've just talked about is those students that continue in that study, right? They then go on, and we need to make sure that they're reaching the standard that they need to.
Yep.
So 15-year-olds...
Okay, so you're going to, you know, they're going to go out and get a job in the workforce one day, aren't they? We hope. And that job is going to surely involve reading, comprehension, writing, all that sort of stuff. You've got to be able to do that, you know. The number of kids that cannot string two words together to make a coherent sort of, you know, sentence or whatever is just frightening.
Speculation? Is this something to do with the rise in, like, you know, how they use iPads in schools now? You know, in terms of technology change.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, at university, you have to write your exams with a pen. You know, and I'm kind of thinking that, you know, an awful lot of stuff now, you're right, gets done on devices. And so
typed,
it's all typing and everything like that. Typed, spell checked, et cetera, et cetera. You get kids without a spell checker, you know. And, oh, it's... Okay, so you need to be literate to have any sort of a job because... Every job on the planet somewhere involves communication somehow.
And then going to maths and science?
Maths, surely numeracy, you know? That's surely is part and parcel of shit everyday life, you know? Are you getting the correct change at the checkout, you know?
Simple and science like too, just different ways of understanding the world, right?
In terms of
practice, experiment.
And, okay, so science, dare I say, here's a my old bugbear. There's a bloody measles epidemic in Samoa at the moment, you know. That comes back to vaccination, doesn't it? It's all about science. And there are people who will deny that, you know, but let's not go there. Shit, if we want the world to advance, or even if we want the world to stand still, we've got to know about science. We've got to be able to communicate, so we've got to be able to read and write. And we've got to be numerate. And we've got to insist that our kids are. Who's top of the list in all three disciplines? Which country do you reckon?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to take a stab at that.
Okay, well, which four countries then?
I don't know. You tell me, Alan.
China, Singapore, Macau, and Hong Kong. So three Chinas basically and a Singapore, mm-hmm. you know. Which countries are doing, you know, really well in the world, I guess? And if you're measuring doing really well in terms of purely, you know, making things and trade and all that, you
growth,
know, and all of that sort of stuff and growth, you know, economically speaking, you know, they're the powerhouse countries, mm-hmm. and it's no coincidence that, you know, their kids seem to be doing best at this. But Hell, I don't have the answer. I know the government are looking into this at the moment, and they're, you know, doling out, what was it, $400 million, I think, to all of the secondary schools. Let's hope that that money is used wisely, and let's hope that it's put into the areas that are going to benefit the students most. The one other finding of this study was that students are feeling less safe at school, and they are enduring bullying and, you know, those sorts of things. You know, that's not good either, is it?
No.
So I wouldn't want to be the Minister of Education.
But
I do keep telling my students that when I am the Minister of Education, by God, there'll be some changes.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Alan. It's been an interesting show today.
Good, yeah, thank you.
Like that. All right. Well, I may not see you.
I know. Yes. Yeah. But have a great time in Germany/Italy.
I haven't told everyone.
Oh,
yet,
God, sorry. Oh,
spoiler.
No.
Help. That's right. I'll explain to them next week. Somebody's texted in.
Ooh, is it controversial?
Such is the result of multi-generational state-enforced education. One-size-fits-all conditioning centres, get out while you can. Cheers, Peter. More freedom, less government. Great to hear from you, Peter. Thank you for all your work this year, Alan. You'll be back. Everyone else will hear you, just
been
not
a pleasure.
Me.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Mind blown. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology. Everything.